Golf Smarter number 68 for April 3rd, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Ryan Stemsrud of the Sedona Golf Resort.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. If you're new to the Golf Smarter podcast, welcome. I hope you can find something from our conversations that will help you enjoy the game a little bit more. You notice this music that I play on a regular basis, our theme song? I just noticed that last week I was watching the Golf Channel, and they had the nationwide tour event going on at the course at Wente Vineyards, which we did a show about last year. You should go check it out. They were playing this music when they went in and out of commercials. They call those bumpers. They were playing this music. I thought, hey, that's our theme song. That's so cool. I thought I'd give you a little taste of that. So next time you're watching the Golf Channel, you hear this, you'll go, that's the Golf Smarter podcast music. Golf Smarter is brought to you in part by the Bird Golf Academy. Ultimate instruction on ultimate courses for ultimate results. Check out the Bird Golf Academy by clicking on their link at golfsmarterpodcast.com. And don't forget that all listeners of the Golf Smarter podcast receive an exclusive 10% discount to the Bird Golf Academy. Now for today's program, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf will introduce us to the latest line of Ping drivers and will give away a McGregor NVG2 fairway wood. Our guest today is Ryan Stemsrud, the director of golf for the Sedona Golf Resort in Sedona, Arizona. If you've ever heard about or seen the famed Red Rocks of Sedona, you wouldn't easily forget this beautiful area. Well, this championship course regularly receives 4-star ratings from Golf Digest. Welcome, Ryan.
Hi, Fred.
How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. The Sedona Golf Resort is not in the Phoenix area. Actually, it's completely different than Phoenix, isn't it?
Yes, it's about 90 minutes north of Scottsdale, you know, Scottsdale being a suburb of Phoenix, and about twice as high in elevation. We're up at about 4,000 feet, and Scottsdale area is just under 2,000. So we're typically between 10 and 15 degrees cooler. That makes for a great retreat in the summertime for Phoenix residents.
Oh, yeah, I would think so. And I would imagine that the terrain is completely different.
You know, it sure is. There's a lot less cactus, a lot more juniper and pine. It's high desert. It's not quite a full mountain golf experience, but the high desert, a mix between the two.
And so trees, I guess, would come into play where you don't necessarily get that down in the desert.
Right. Yeah, with a lot of our fairways are protected by trees to keep balls from going into the desert area, and that's certainly, as you mentioned, something you don't see so much in Phoenix. You see more of cactuses and bushes along the sides of the fairway, so certainly different landscaping as well.
And is the elevation have an impact where you are on the flight of the ball?
It does, yeah. It's at 2,000 feet, it's probably a minimum of a club to a club and a half difference from the valley, to double the elevation. It's certainly, as you get higher, you start to feel a little bit stronger and a little bit more John Daly-like. So it's a nice difference from Phoenix. You tend to get a little bit more roll up here in the mountain country, too.
Oh, so it's probably a good idea to hit the driving range before you go out, because you're going to miss a lot of greens if you're hitting the ball well.
Yeah, that certainly is, and we got a wonderful practice facility at Sedona Golf Resort, so range balls are included with our fees, and
well, that's nice.
We enjoy that everybody arriving and getting a chance to loosen up and practice before they tee off.
Well, give us a little overview of what the Sedona Golf Resort offers in addition to golf.
It's certainly a full-service facility with a restaurant and a banquet area. So we do a lot of lunch and dinners. We also do a lot of weddings. We have a neat wedding ceremony site and, do somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 weddings a year and also receptions. We do have, as I mentioned, a full-service driving range aside from the golf course. Great instruction programs. One which comes to mind in Bird Golf, is a teaching school that we have at Sedona Golf Resort that specializes in one-on-one instruction with a LPGA or PGA professional, and that's a neat offering that we have from March through about October.
And Bird Golf is actually one of the sponsors of our program.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And so your LPGA instructor, who might that be? Do you know?
Well, we have an LPGA teaching professional. Her name is Heather Risk. Uh-huh. And there's a few with Bird Golf that also teach up at Sedona Golf Resort that are LPGA professionals. One of which I know well, her name is Shirley Furlong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the names of some of the other LPGA gals with the golf school off the top of my head, but I've met most of them, and they're wonderful people to work with.
Yeah, they really are. I actually just got back from the Bird Golf Academy down at Wild Horse Pass and worked with Anne Marie Polly, and she beat me up good time.
Get some blisters on your hands?
Oh, my God, I couldn't believe how much my hands hurt. We'd go to lunch, and I'd stick my hand in a glass of ice, and she'd look at me like, what are you doing? It's like, ow, it hurts. I think of Sedona, and I think of incredible hikes and views and colors in the rocks and things like that. I don't think of golf. Is there a lot of golf up there?
There's actually three golf courses, one that's completely private in Seven Canyons, one that's semi-private at Oak Creek Country Club, and, of course, us at Sedona Golf Resort. I wouldn't be hesitant to say that we're the most recognized, been around the longest, and, do have the most availability in catering to the public. And certainly not golf in the way that you think with Phoenix, with a couple hundred courses in the greater Phoenix area. Here in the Verde Valley, we have about six golf courses, catering to the amount of local traffic that we have, I think we just have a perfect supply suited to the demand, even when you include the traveler.
Hmm. Do you have a hilly course, or is it fairly flat like the rest of, most of the courses down in Phoenix, Scottsdale are really flat? But you're up in the hills, the mountains. What is the walking terrain like, or is it even a walking course?
You certainly can walk. The neat thing about our golf course is it climbs about 250 feet out to the 10th tee, and that's why you have such wonderful panoramas from the 10th tee. One of the most famous pictures that you see at Sedona Golf Resort is from that high spot. It certainly is walkable. We just tell people that when they commit to it, they're in it for the entire 18, as they're, a couple miles away from the clubhouse when they hit the turn.
Mm.
So it's serene there. I think that, the link style and of out and back is a different experience that we enjoy having.
I got an email. I wanted to ask you about your practice facility. Are you on grass or mats?
We actually have both. We're grass 95% of the time. The only time we use mats is during frost delays in the wintertime. December, January, part of February. It can get frosty in the morning until 9:30 or so. So that way we can allow people to hit balls still while they're waiting for the frost to get off the course.
Okay. Yeah, I bring that up because I was saying that I received an email from somebody who wants to know the difference between practicing on mats versus grass. What's your experience with that, and how do you instruct players on how to take advantage of one versus the other?
I would say mats are good for people that don't have access to grass in the wintertime, especially in colder climates. I think mats are quite a bit more forgiving and maybe a little bit misleading than grass. For example, if you hit behind the ball on a mat, typically the surface is firm enough that you won't hit the ball fat or, some people might say chunk it, so many different words for it. But when you're doing that on a mat, a lot of times you won't notice from the ball flight that you did hit it poorly because they're so much more forgiving. So it isn't a long-term practice regimen that's going to help you assess, potential problems through ball flight, but it does help you keep limber in the wintertime and, especially if you're in a climate like the Northeast where there isn't really golf courses to get on. A lot of times they have mats in the indoor practice facilities, and that's certainly better than nothing during the wintertime.
One of the things I noticed when I was at Bird Golf that she kept pointing out is that I was hitting the ground first, then hitting the ball, and I needed to hit the ball, then hit the ground.
That's a big step.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out either. But I guess when you're if you're hitting off of a mat, you really don't know where you're going to be hitting because it's not going to leave a mark for you, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, the one advantage, Fred, when you were hitting it fat down at Bird Golf is you probably didn't hook it or slice it too much either. So you didn't have that going for you.
Well, you want to bet? I needed a lot of work.
Usually when I hit it fat, it doesn't tend to curve too much one way or the other. So I can usually hit it straight and fat.
So tell me, I want to have a rundown on some of the holes in your course. Like your favorite hole on the golf course. Tell us why it's your favorite hole, and then like give us a little detour of walk us through on playing that hole, if you don't mind.
My favorite hole is the fifth. It's a par five. It's 620 yards, and it climbs probably about 50 feet from tee to green. And it's my favorite hole is being that it's, you know, I haven't met too many par fives that are that much of a challenge. I really feel good walking away with par on that hole. And, you know, being that it's a lot of times it's into the wind and uphill, it comes like between 650 and 700 yards. So it's a par five where I can hit a really good drive and a really good three wood and still have, you know, a good solid 7 or 8 iron into the green. And, you know, I think that's, you don't see that a lot of times these days in golf courses, you know, where golf professionals have that much left into the greens on a third shot on a par five. And, you know, I certainly don't hit it as far as Tiger Woods or anything, but I know that he couldn't get there in two either. So I think that that's a neat aspect of our golf course and a challenge I look forward to on that hole.
Wouldn't you love to get that bet? Wouldn't you, to Tiger going, I bet you can't get there in two and let him try. Wouldn't you love that opportunity?
I would love to see it. You know, there's some stories from a few people that say that they've seen people do it, but I'm not going to buy into any of it until I can see it with my own eyes. So I would love to see that happen.
Is a lot of undulation in your greens?
You know, a fair amount. You know, I'd certainly say probably average, if not a little bit more. You know, some of our, we have a double green, for example. Our fifth green shares with our eighth green. And it's pretty unique. It's extremely large when you combine the two, and the point where they combine is pretty narrow. But both of those greens are quite undulating. You know, most of them that do undulate are those top holes from, let's say, maybe 5 through 11 that really start to climb towards the 10th tee where you gain all that elevation. So that adds to the fun of some of those holes is, you know, they start to break pretty severely back towards the clubhouse as you climb up the hill. So you can, you know, a lot of times two putts can be good on those holes, and you definitely don't want to be behind the hole putting back towards the clubhouse.
I guess then if you're hitting in the mountains and you need to go less club, but you're going uphill, so you need to add a club, what your yardage would be on a normal basis, just take out the club you usually hit?
That's true. I think the two could negate each other. Absolutely. You know, being up, if you're used to playing golf in Phoenix or even at sea level, and you might hit it about the same when you are on those uphill holes. You know, the ninth is another example of an uphill par five that we have where that would come into play. And then conversely, you know, coming downhill on the back nine, say 11, 12, 13, you know, the opposite is true. You certainly, you know, you're going to hit it further being at elevation and it's downhill. So a lot of people tend to go over the backs of those greens. Easy to take advantage of somebody that hasn't played the course before. So that's good to have a little bit of course knowledge.
Give us another tour of one of your favorite, well, the hardest. Let's go to the hardest hole. Or is the par five?
I would say the hardest hole in my mind is it plays like a par five, but it's about 150 yards. A lot of the locals say the number seventh par three is the toughest par five on the golf course. And the reason for that is it's a pretty narrow green, and it is one, you know, as I was mentioning earlier, pretty severely sloped back towards the clubhouse. So you can hit it, you know, in this instance, it would be you're facing south. So if you hit it right of the hole, anything hits your putt back to the hole is extremely fast. Big bunkers, two big bunkers on the right side, two big bunkers on the left side, and out of bounds on the left. And a lot of times a pretty steep crosswind coming from the west. So that's my favorite hole. It's a challenge to hit that green, and even once you get it on the green, you know, you still have your work cut out for you to two-putt. And I wouldn't by any means say it's unfair. It certainly requires a good tee shot, and it's one of the tougher holes I've seen at 150 yards, you know, based on the terrain alone. So I enjoy that part of it, too.
Lots of fun. When was the course open?
Course actually was built in 1988. It's a Gary Panks design. In 1996, it was purchased and began being managed by Suncor, and at that time, the clubhouse and restaurant facility was built. So it's changed a lot, and it changed a lot in the mid-90s when we did put in a clubhouse. Before then, it was a trailer, and even when it first opened, actually, they used to take the green fees from a little shoebox down on the number one tee, so it has some really neat history to it. The course has always been the same, wonderful. But, you know, as the area has become more popular, Sedona's grown, more tourist traffic has come in. It's become a world-class facility with the clubhouse we put in and all the amenities that we offer.
Gary Panks is not a designer I'm familiar with. What is his stamp on your golf course? What makes the course say, oh, this is a Gary Panks design, in your mind?
Well, Fred, I think that's a great question, one that I don't have the answer to right off the top of my head.
Have you ever seen another Gary Panks course?
Absolutely. You know, some of the renowned courses that he did are the golf club at Chaparral Pines up in Payson. Wonderful, wonderful mountain course. Fire Rock in Fountain Hills. Fire Rock is across from our sister property, Sunridge Canyon. Wonderful area to play golf in Fountain Hills, just on the outside of Phoenix, Arizona. Also, Greyhawk. Most people have heard of Greyhawk.
Oh, yeah.
Gary Panks design. Legacy Golf Resort down in downtown Phoenix, down by the airport. The remodel of Paradise Valley Country Club. Raven Golf Club at South Mountain. And also the new golf courses down in the south side, south of Chandler at Whirlwind Golf Club.
Oh, yeah. And where another?
Those are just a few of his, and just in the state of Arizona.
So he's quite busy. There's a lot of work for architects.
You know, and a lot, you know, I hear a lot of buzz going on too about the Twin Warriors Golf Club in New Mexico in the Albuquerque area. That's also a Gary Panks, and that's received a lot of neat accolades.
Interesting. And as instructor, do you advise players to be more of a student of architecture or equipment when it comes to strategy on the golf course? Or do you even bring that up? You just talk about mechanics.
You know, I certainly wouldn't. I wouldn't think so much an architect. I would think equipment maybe in terms of making sure that they don't have equipment that is too difficult based on their playing ability. You know, for example, my father is starting to pick up golf. He's recently retired. And unbeknownst to him, you know, he had some late 80 designed tour models, kind of a knockoff at that point. But, you know, golf club design and technology has come so far in the last 20 years that just putting him in some new clubs, some top flights we found from Walmart were a huge advantage for him just based on the size, the oversized driver, the oversized irons, and the forgiveness that they offer. You know, his enjoyment of the game increased immensely. The driver used to be his least favorite club in the bag, and now it's his favorite because it's probably three times the size of what his old outdated club was. You know, and some other times I see some people who maybe are 20 handicap and they're playing a Mizuno blade or a Titleist blade. Just some things that don't necessarily suit their game where they could improve a lot if they had some clubs that were, you know, more applicable to their ability level.
Do you put a lot of validity into strategy for an upper handicap player, or do you think it's just more about mechanics and being able to hit the ball properly?
You know, I would say once I starting to teach course management and, you know, strategy in that fashion, I wouldn't think would be applicable for most golfers that aren't better than a 20 handicap. I think that's where I'd personally draw the line. I think for the 20 handicapper, it's, you know, certainly fundamentals. You know, mechanics when they're on the driving range, but hopefully never mechanics when they're on the golf course.
That's
the way that I try to teach my students is, you know, give them the fundamentals that they work with on the driving range. But once they get out on the golf course, they have to play what they brought to the table for that day. And if that day it happens to be a slice, then they aim left and play the slice. You know, if it happens to be a draw that day, then aim right and play the draw. And, you know, the golf golf course isn't the place to be working on mechanics or to have any thoughts in your head, hopefully, as other than, you know, where do I want to hit it? What's my target? And that's, you know, kind of a Harvey Pinnick mentality, is take dead aim. And I think that's extremely important. It certainly gets easier as your ability level gets better, but, you know, I think definitely the range is where the mechanics would come in the course, is to have fun and hit it to your target.
Fun?
Oh, yeah.
Are you kidding me?
There's no other reason to be out there, is there, Fred?
It's hard work, man.
It sure can be, but isn't that why we love it?
Yeah, absolutely right. There are so many aspects to the golf industry, and some that are highly visible to the general public, and some that are just visible to the industry itself, and then some that are completely invisible, I would think. And I would guess that one of the more invisible positions is the maintenance person to the public, but they're pretty important.
I would agree with that.
To guys like you, especially.
Absolutely. You know, and time again, when guests rate a golf course, the most important thing to them is course conditions. You know, certainly the surface level.
And it seems like, and the views.
And the views. Absolutely. You know, that's one of the things that, that the superintendent is obviously in charge of, is putting the best foot forward of the golf course. And, you know, that is the thing. You know, people will pay more for a golf course that's in pristine shape. Time and time again, and that tends to be the number one thing that they critique when they have a poor experience, is, you know, maybe the greens were bad, or the fairways were bad, or things of that nature. And, you know, the superintendent doesn't get to have that customer interaction. They typically only get to hear the other side of it when there's a problem.
Sure.
From the course personnel like myself. You know, they don't get the customer contact, that when things are great, customers come in and say, wow, what a wonderful golf course, what great shape it is. So it's important that they hear that too and understand. You know, let the good come with the bad, and vice versa.
Why would your course be designated as a resort course? What makes it a golf course or a resort course?
Well, we have accommodations on property, world-class accommodations in the Hilton, HiltonSedona.com. And it's in the Sedona area, certainly one of the top three in terms of amenities that they offer and quality of accommodations. You know, Hilton's certainly a name that carries that on its own. But this particular property, you know, being on golf, right at the golf course, you know, has some wonderful views of the golf course. And, you know, when people come out to the Hilton, they can come into the golf course and charge golf back to their room, charge merchandise back to their room, so on and so forth. And, you know, it's a resort also in the fact that there's a spa, there's tennis, along with the spa, certainly the pool, you know, all those things that in a resort atmosphere that can cater to couples as well as children and offer the full gamut of amenities.
Okay. Sounds like we're headed up there. Let's get going.
It's great. You know, and it's amazing how much more popular spas are becoming too, Fred.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, I know that on a recent honeymoon with my wife that I could play golf and she could go to the spa, and you know, that's a good trade out. And it's, even with men, believe it or not, I have to take to it myself, but men are getting more and more interested in spa treatments and massages and things. So that's a very important amenity that a lot of times a lot of the resorts are finding selling almost as well as golf. So, you know, when you can package it all, you really truly do have a resort.
You just said something that you need to explain to me, to our audience, to every man alive. You just said you went on a honeymoon and got to go out and play golf. How did you do that? Did your wife play?
She doesn't.
She does not play.
She wants to learn, but it can't be from me.
Wait a minute, Ryan. You're a golf professional. You just got married. Your wife does not play golf. You went on a honeymoon. You went out and played, and she didn't?
She didn't.
Dude. How'd you do that?
I guess I married the right woman, Fred.
Yes, you did. Oh, my gosh, that's a phenomenal story. Yeah, I've been married a long time. That's really remarkable. Don't ever try to do that on her birthday, though.
Or the anniversary.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're going to travel on her birthday, and you may travel on your anniversary, but, you know, I have a friend who once told me, birthdays are a waste of time. Anniversaries, you know, a birthday, you wake up one morning, oh, I'm another year older. But an anniversary, that's a celebration. You really have to, you know, work hard to get to the next year. So on your course, on this Gary Panks design, what are the most common mistakes that you see players making?
On my design, I would say that, you know, it's the course isn't particularly long. It measures 6,650 yards from the back tees. But the mistake I see making is that people tend to use the yardage as a judge of difficulty. So, you know, our course from the back tees is a considerable challenge and isn't really, you know, meant for anybody, I would say, under or anybody not an 8 handicap or better. I would say, you know, to play that tee, you'd want to be, you know, worse than an 8. But, you know, a better judge of difficulty of a golf course is its rating and slope. And I'd like to, you know, if I had a ability to change that, I would tell golfers to make those decisions on what they wanted, tees they wanted to play from based on those numbers rather than yardage alone. And I would think that it would usually create a better experience for them and you know, maybe not run into problems with pace from playing back too far and things of that nature.
Give us some advice on how to judge the rating and slope and where we should be playing from and why that is so important for the enjoyment of the game.
Well, the rating is meant for a scratch player. You know, the rating at Sedona Golf Resort is it's a par 71 and the rating is 70.6 from the back tees. So what that means is a scratch golfer is expected to shoot, you know, four tenths of one stroke less than par. Now, rating and slope are completely different. Slope is a number for an average golfer. An average slope is about 115. The slope for us is 128 from the back tees. And about the highest slope I've ever seen is around 145. You know, courses like Black Wolf Run in Wisconsin, some of the courses on the Robert Trent Jones Trail in Alabama where I used to work that are, you know, 7,900 yards at sea level. The reason that that number is so much different is that for an average golfer, distance does tend to be more of a problem. And, you know, as you'll see with handicaps and hole ratings, the average golfer has more problems with par fives than they do with par threes. And that's completely opposite from a golf professional or a scratch player. A scratch player expects to make birdie on a par five, and, you know, their stroke average is usually higher than par on par threes. So, that, you know, the two numbers are used for different people. So for your average golfer, take a look at your slope. If it's above 115, that means it's going to be harder than an average course for you. And our number at 128 would be an indication that, you know, if you are over an 8 handicap, you might want to move up to the whites, for example.
Excellent advice and an excellent description, too, because that's not always something that people understand. I think that you're right. They do look at the yardage and say, oh, yeah, we can handle this. And they're playing from the wrong tees.
Absolutely.
But if you play from the wrong tee sometimes, you might get in less trouble.
You got that right. And, you know, have a lot more fun. You know, most people, when they play well on a golf course, they have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the lower number, the better they're going to feel off the golf course. The opportunity to do that is a lot better if they play tees to match their ability.
So tell me, as a golfer, what's the best advice you've ever received?
You know, I would say to try as best I can to leave my emotions at the clubhouse or in the car. You know, it's really easy to get upset over a missed two-footer and carry that with you with the rest of the round. And, you know, as I progressed, I started golf at 7 years old, you know, which now for my age being 32, 25 years ago. Just in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years have I really, probably five, moreover, understood how important it is to forget about what you did on the shot before or even the hole before. You know, each shot is a new opportunity. And, yes, you add up all your shots at the end of the round, and that's what determines your score. But, you know, carrying with you what you may have, you know, like as example I used before, missing a two-footer or hitting a ball out of bounds, that doesn't help you along with the rest of the round. It tends to drag you down, and things just snowball and get worse. I think that that's something that amateurs certainly, and even professionals, need to do more. Is don't live in the past when you're on the golf course. Just think about the shot at hand and nothing that's happened before, and focus on that.
You mentioned missing 2-foot putts, which we all do. And they clearly, the pros do it as well. The touring pros do it as well. It seems like when we go out and practice our putting on the putting green, we tend to practice stuff from 10 feet to 50 feet and just take the two footers and one hand them in, or just, you know, move the ball to somewhere else. Can you give us a drill to practice putts that would be 4 feet and under that you like?
You know, absolutely. I think a great drill is one that Phil Mickelson teaches. You can even start at 2 feet, but, you know, take a dozen balls, or, you know, maybe somewhere between 8 and 12, and line them up in a circle around the green starting at 2 feet, and work around the circle. And as soon as you make all of them from 2 feet, then line them up again at 3 feet. And once you miss, you start back over from scratch. And that'll really teach you how to make the twos, the threes, and the four-footers. And if you can get all the way out to a five-footer and a six-footer before you miss one, then you're certainly starting to notice your improvement. And, you know, you hit the nail right on the head. You know, it's not the 10-foot and the 50-foot putt that's important. It's making those two-footers. It's just like putting versus driving. You know, putting, you're going to half your shots in a round are going to be on the putting green, and maybe only 10 of them with driver off the tee. So, you know, certainly you're going to putt five times as much as you're going to tee off a driver. And you see amateurs, before they tee off or on their practice sessions, they just hit balls. They never end up chipping or putting or working around the green. And that's really, you know, when I teach and somebody wants to improve their score, where's the easiest and quickest and most effective way to shave strokes is on the putting green and around the putting green, chipping and pitching.
So what I'm hearing you say is that really your goal should be not getting a low score, it's keeping it from being a high score.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of what you do when you're around a chipping green also is, or around a putting green, when you decide what to do, whether you're going to putt, chip, or pitch, is about minimizing your mistakes. You know, for example, when I teach people short game, I tell them, you know, a lot of it just says putt when you can, chip when you need to, and pitch only when you have to. For example, if you have 100 feet of green in front of you, you don't want to pitch at 80 feet and, you know, try to stop it within 20. You want to chip at 20 feet and let it roll another 80. You could do that with a 6-iron, a 7-iron, maybe even an 8-iron. The smaller stroke you take, the less opportunity for error you have. You know, if you're on the fringe of a green, don't take out a lob wedge and try to hit a flop shot and drop it right on top of the flagstick. Sometimes you'll hit it fat, sometimes you'll skull it and miss the green altogether. But if you putt it, you know, your worst putt is always going to be better than your worst chip. Worst chip will be better than your worst pitch, et cetera, et cetera.
Excellent advice. I really like that. That may be one of our closing quotes that we have at the end of the show. I thought that was excellent. How do we get in touch with and make a tee time at the Sedona Golf Resort?
Well, we have a 1-800 number, and we also have a wonderful active website where you can book tee times. Our 1-800 number is 877-733-9885, or our website, www.sedonagolfresort.com.
S-E-D-O-N-A?
G-O-L-F, resort, R-E-S-O-R-T.com.
Yeah, just want to make sure we got Sedona correct. How far in advance can we book a tee time?
60 days.
And your pricing versus the Phoenix Scottsdale pricing, which can be outrageous sometimes.
Yeah, there's many golf courses in the Phoenix area, as an example, maybe Troon or Greyhawk, that can get, you know, the Boulders too, between $250 and $300 for a round of golf in the month of March. We're $105.
Okay.
So we don't fluctuate much through the year. We're either $93 or $105.
And what is your season? What's the best time of year to be playing the Sedona Golf Resort?
Right now.
Okay.
Spring is the best, not only from a temperature standpoint, but also typically from the conditions of the golf course. You know, certainly we're in the winter, we brown out a little bit, depending on how cold we get. And in the summertime, you know, it does still get somewhat hot in Sedona, certainly not like Phoenix. You know, we can get some high days in the high 90s, maybe even around 100. But spring and fall are, you know, the temperatures that people like, hanging out in the mid-70s. And that's the temperature that the grass likes best, too. The ryegrass grows best around 75 degrees.
Well, isn't it like from May to October, it's over 100 degrees every day in Phoenix?
Yeah, and we're, you know, gosh, sometimes even this year it might get there before May.
Yeah.
Sometimes it happens in April, but absolutely, it doesn't really tend to cool off until late October.
Well, this has been really great, useful information. I really appreciate your time, Ryan. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely, Fred. Thank you so much for having me.
Golf Smarter now presents Nick's Picks with Kenny Nicholson, sales manager for EdwinWattsGolf.com. Kenny keeps us up to date with reviews of new products and new product development. Nick's Picks is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968.
Kenny Nicholson, how are you?
I'm good, Fred. Besides some allergies acting up a little bit, I'm doing great.
Oh, yeah. That's that time of year
here in Florida.
Yeah, it's that time of year here in California, and my son's having the same problem.
How are you doing, Fred?
I don't have allergies anymore. I've grown up.
You grew out of them.
I really have. I had them for years, but they just kind of disappeared.
Well, good for you.
But that also means that it's becoming golf weather, doesn't it?
That is correct. Cabin fever. You know, people are trying to get out and play a little golf and hopefully buy new merchandise. And,
yeah. I got an email from somebody in Norway saying, well, the snow is starting to thaw, which means I'm going to get to go out and play golf. If this is the result of global warming, I'm all for it.
Oh, man. I believe it. I mean, it's been cold up in the Northeast especially, and we're getting, you know, our catalog's just now launching, and people are ready to start getting out and playing some more golf and hopefully buying some products. And
there you go.
Tell them about some of the new stuff that's out.
Let's keep our priorities straight, huh?
Exactly. We can talk golf all day. They want to hear about stuff.
Well, I think that since we're at the beginning of a new golf season, we should talk about some equipment.
I agree 100%.
And we're not going to answer any questions today because it's not like we're not getting any questions in, and please keep them coming. We really appreciate it. But there's some equipment you want to talk about today.
There is.
And what would that be?
Every manufacturer, just about the big boys, what we say, they have a couple of different drivers in their line and a couple of different fairways woods in their line to try to fit, you know, each and every driver out there, different price points, things of that nature. So what I want to talk about today is a brand favorite of mine, because I do play some of their products, but it's the Ping, some of the Ping metal woods that they offer. To give a little bit of an idea, because they do have a couple drivers and they do have a couple fairway woods, and talk about the advantages and benefits of each one real quick and see if that might steer somebody in the right direction.
And I know that for years the people that I've played with, when they like to buy top of the line and they like to drive their BMWs or their Mercedes, they love to have a set of Ping clubs in their bag.
You're right. I mean, I play their irons. I've played them for a long, long time. You know, I believe in their product, and they're an American company, privately held still, and they do a great job, and I really, really like the brand.
Great, great. So those consumers with discerning tastes, Ping is a great choice.
It is a very good choice.
And specifically, what would you like to talk about?
Well, let's go over their driver line real quick. The Ping Rapture driver and the Ping G5, two different models. They're two different price points as well. The G5 driver's $299 and the Rapture driver's $429. Tell you a little bit real quick why the price is different. Obviously, the Rapture driver, there's a little bit more technology used in that golf club, so it's price-driven a little bit higher as well. But they're both titanium golf clubs. The Ping has the Rapture has a milled inserted face made out of titanium. And then they use a filament wound or a carbon fiber injected into a mold inside the top of the golf club. So what they're able to do there is take some of that weight, from metal and be able to distribute that in the club head in different spots to increase something we always talk about, moment of inertia. So they have, if you could see a diagram of their golf club, you would see what I'm talking about, the inner parts of the golf club that help make it work. There's one out towards the heel, or out towards the toe, and one towards the heel. And what that does is it stabilizes the golf club on off-center hits. I mean, you and I have played together, and as well as a lot of other people out there, know that you don't hit the golf club in the sweet spot every time. You're going to miss it on the heel, or you're going to miss it on the toe. And when you do that, these weight pads that they insert in the golf club help stabilize the club, and there's less twisting on impact. So it brings the golf club or golf ball into play more. So you're playing from the short grass instead of the long grass. In essence, your scores are going to get better. I love the product. Noise is a big factor. Anytime you use composite inside a golf club, it dampens vibration, it dampens noise as well. And the big problem they had was trying to create something that had a good sound to it as well, and they hit a home run with this one. It sounds awesome at impact. And the golf club is very, very playable. I mean, you can work the ball with it and bring the ball in and play on off-center hits. So, great golf club.
Great golf club.
That's the Rapture. The G5 is a 460cc. That's the overall club head size. That is the maximum allowable by the USGA, just to let you know out there. And it does have the internal weight system as well, where they position the weights in there to increase moment of inertia. It does not have any composite or filament wound in the head of the golf club. So price point is a little bit less expensive. It's $299 versus the Rapture, which is a little more expensive. But it does have the internal weights to help stabilize the golf club as well.
And is it also a club that can help you stay in the fairway?
That is correct. Absolutely. Anytime you increase MOI, a buzzword that we use often on this show, anytime you increase that, you increase playability. The golf club's not going to have you increase playability. The club's going to have less twisting, so you're going to be able to hit the ball in play more often.
And that kind of levels the playing field for the low to versus the higher handicap players, right?
Absolutely.
And that's what a handicap does just in scoring, but you want to hit the ball well, you want to put it in the fairway.
Anytime you're in the fairway, you're going to score better.
Absolutely.
The majority of higher handicap players out there, they lose a lot of shots inside 100 yards, what I say. I mean, or chipping and putting, things of that nature. But if you're struggling off the tee, it's just going to make you struggle that much more around the greens. You're taking more shots to get to where your struggle point is. So anytime you can increase playability off the tee, you're hopefully going to increase somebody's playability and their score around the greens. When I struggle out there, it's usually off the tee.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can find a driver out there that's going to help me get off the tee better, I know that my rounds are going to be better. So, I was talking to Edwin the other day, and he said, there's so many drivers out there. If you can't find one right now, there's a problem. So, I mean, there's a ton of drivers out there for people to choose from. I'm not saying that this is the one for everyone, but I'm just saying they make a solid, great product.
And always have.
Always have, yeah. And they're not one of the manufacturers that come out with new products every year just to come out with a new product. They come out with a new product when they have something that is better than the product that they made before.
That's admirable.
Yeah, it is. It speaks volumes for their brand. They have so much brand equity that they do not want to come out with something that does not perform better than what they had before. And every time they come out with something new, you can be rest assured that it's going to be good.
Kenny?
Yes.
Can I ask a favor?
Absolutely.
Can we give one away?
It just so happens that Bobby Reyes, my ping rep, was sitting in my office today, and I told Bobby, I said, I'm telling you, it would be awesome if we could give one of these products away today.
Really?
And he agreed.
Whoa!
He agreed. So we're going to give away a Ping G5 driver today to a lucky listener. I'm telling you right now, this is it's a big giveaway. I would love to win it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So we're going to give away a Ping G5 driver.
Correct.
Whoa. All right. And we're going to do something else to make it even easier to enter our drawings that we've been doing in the past, because I've always asked, please send an email, make sure you include your name and blah, blah, blah. Well, I've been receiving a lot of emails from people, and the reason that sometimes people will send an email that says that'll be 2 or 3 weeks behind on what we're doing is because it's a podcast. So you don't always get to listen to the podcast as soon as it comes out. I know some people try to make a point of it, but that's not the way life is anymore, and you can't always do it. And since you guys have always committed to giveaway product when we get the chance, here's what we're going to do. If you're going to enter our latest contest, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the word contest just below the Edwin Watts Golf banner. Once there, fill out all the information. And each time we're going to change the prize. So if you've not entered, fill it out, fill out the verification code so that we can prevent spam hackers and stuff. And then just click submit. And that's all you'll have to do. So if you've missed the show, you haven't had a chance to listen to the show, you can still go to the Golf Smarter Podcast contest page and see what we're giving away at that time. It'll be at the top of the page. And if you haven't entered at that time, just click it and send. Oh, at the bottom of the page, there's a space to send comments and suggestions. And in the past, I've responded to everyone who's entered. But please don't be offended if I don't write you back this time. If you write me a note, I will do my best to respond. Promise. Of course, you can still send an email to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com if you'd like. So for more information, please check the show notes. Deadline for entries will be midnight, April 16th, and the winner will be announced on the program of April 17th, 2007. But that's not all. We have something else to give away today, right?
That is correct.
We're giving away the
McGregor NVG2 Fairway Wood.
Yes, sirree. And over the last 2 weeks, we've received 123 entries. So what I did was I sorted it by last name. And of the 123 entries, you get to pick whatever you'd like. And that would be number?
I'm going to change it up. I'm going to go number one.
Oh.
I haven't done
well,
that.
We have somebody who's in. You're shipping these, right, Kenny? I don't have to?
No, I am.
You will.
I will, yeah.
Good, because you're shipping this to Victoria, Australia.
Awesome, that's great.
Yeah, and it goes to Mark Ashton in Victoria, Australia. You see, we do set of it. That's awesome, great. Anyway, Mark Ashton of Victoria, Australia is our winner this time, and he's going to get the McGregor NVG2 Fairway Wood. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Mark.
Yep, and the next winner is going to win a Ping G5 driver. So cool. All right, Kenny, thanks so much, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Fred.
And while you're entering our contest drawing, please check out the rest of our new website, smarterpodcasts.com. Remember, it's plural podcasts. Another new program we just released is a radio syndication that I did in 1987 called Radio Baseball Cards. The host is the late Hall of Fame pitcher Don Drysdale, and we talk to some of the greatest baseball players of the 20th century. Our first show is with Duke Snider from the Brooklyn Dodgers talking about the first game of his career and the other rookie who debuted that day in 1947 and stole all the headlines, Jackie Robinson. Next week we'll feature Hank Aaron talking about the day he broke Babe Ruth's record. That's Radio Baseball Cards at smarterpodcasts.com and of course at iTunes, but it's a little harder to find there because it's a new show. This week's closing quote is in honor of the opening day of baseball season. If you're not from the United States, it's hard to explain, but the opening day of baseball season is like no other sport. Probably because it means that spring has sprung and winter is now officially over. But there's a lot of pomp and circumstance that goes with it, and it's just a great time of year. But this golf quote is provided by Tim Azier in Wichita, Kansas, who tells us that Hall of Fame catcher Yogi Berra once said, 90% of putts left short don't go in. Please send your quotes, comments, suggestions, and requests to Fred at golfsmarterpodcast.com.